between the words that are spoken and the words that are heard, may the Spirit of God be present. Amen. Well, it's wonderful to be with you this morning. I bring the warmest of greetings to Dean Kate and to you all from the Bishop of Norwich in the east of England, the Bishop of Norwich, Graham Usher, and from the Dean of Norwich Cathedral, Andrew Braddock, and from God's people across the whole of that diocese. It is truly amazing to be here, and it's been special over the last 36 hours or so to explore with many of you what resurrection might look like when we intentionally live it. As we draw near to the end of the Easter season, we've been asking what difference it makes, not just in terms of life after the here and now, but here and now. What if daily, deliberately, we put on the spectacles of resurrection? How might that change the way we see our own brokenness and the brokenness of the world around us? That's what we've been asking. And we've been holding close these words of Rowan Williams, former Archbishop of Canterbury. To believe in the risen Jesus, he wrote, is to trust that the transformational power of God is active, active in the human world, available and relevant to every situation. Every situation. And we were given one brilliant example of that in this morning's reading from Acts. Peter was under the spotlight. We know from some of the letters pinging across the Roman world in these early years of the church that the big issue of the time was whether those who were not Jewish were or were not welcome as members of the Christian church. Could a Gentile be a Christian? 2,000 years later, it seems an extraordinary question to ask, but sadly, every age seems to have its us and them issue. That was the issue then, and a thorny one it was, and no more so than for Peter himself. He was, at first, by all accounts, deeply unconvinced, until, that is, he had a vision, the details of which we read about in the verses immediately before those we heard this morning. Basically, Peter sees a great sheet being lowered before him. In it were all kinds of four-footed creatures and reptiles and birds of the air. And a voice tells him to get up, Peter, kill and eat. Peter is horrified. Ever since he was a little boy, he's known exactly what he, a Jew, can and cannot eat. It makes his stomach turn even to think of consuming some of the wildlife before him. But when he says this out loud, the voice speaks again. What God has called clean, you must not call profane. The whole thing happens three times over and helps Peter to see that mixing with Gentiles should no longer be taboo. He does a complete turnaround. His hostility is transformed into hospitality. And in the passage read this morning, we saw him not only recognizing spiritual gifts in Gentiles, but welcoming them fully into the fold as baptized children of God. That story of Peter's transformation from hostility to hospitality reminds me of another true story. It took place just over 100 years ago during the First World War. A group of British soldiers stationed in France one night encountered tragedy. One of their number had died from the cold. Distraught, they approached the priest in the nearby town to ask if he would bury their friend in the churchyard. With deep regret, the priest informed them that because their friend was not a Roman Catholic, he could not be buried on consecrated ground. However, there was a small boundary fence that ran around the churchyard, so the priest offered to bury their friend on the outside of the fence. And so it happened. Some years later, when the war was over, the soldiers returned to France to visit their friend's grave. They looked all round the small fence, but to their alarm, their friend's grave was nowhere to be seen. So they knocked on the priest's door to ask what had happened to it. The priest smiled at them. "I'm afraid that after we buried your friend," he said, "I felt I had been so unkind that I was unable to sleep. So I got up in the middle of the night and I moved the fence." For Peter, the Gentile was the other. For this French priest, operating long before ecumenism was on the agenda, the other was everyone who wasn't Roman Catholic. But he, despite the strangulating protocol of his time, ultimately found an imaginative way of welcoming the other. He moved the fence. He was true to Christ, the greatest boundary mover of them all. I think now might be the time to turn to the painting on the cover of your service order. Would you be kind enough to find it? It's dazzling, isn't it? And joyous. As you look at it, let me tell you a little about it. It can be seen in the church of St. Peter and St. Paul in East Harling, which is a village some miles south of Norwich in England. And the painting is by the contemporary Norfolk artist, Maz Jackson. In the bottom half of the painting, St. Peter on the left and St. Paul on the right, the saints to whom the church is dedicated, stand on spring grass and they look up at the radiant figure of the risen Jesus. And all the way along Christ's widespread arms stand other disciples. St. Andrew is particularly easy to identify, the saltire cross of his martyrdom behind him. Though the painting pulses with life, each palm of Jesus' huge outstretched arms bears a horrific hole. Gleaming discs, however, now fill those holes. Brutal nails have turned to gold. And the arms of the crucified and risen one go on and on and on and on, endless in their capacity to carry others in their own terrible trials. In every age and in every place, the painting seems to say, Jesus' arms are long enough, strong enough to undergird us all. We see him in the painting lovingly supporting disciples who had variously betrayed him, denied knowing him, run fearfully away when he needed them most. But all we see in return is loving, loving restoration and forgiveness. There is no grudge or resentment. The glittering welcome from Jesus and those extraordinary hospitable arms is unconditional. We are seeing here, in fact, a depiction in paint of the love of Jesus described in today's gospel. We heard Jesus in that gospel urging his disciples to mirror his love for them by loving each other. Well, his love was so profound that it would take him to the cross. His love would turn out to be stronger even than death. How could his disciples possibly mirror that? How can we, his disciples today, possibly mirror that? How can we love one another as he has loved us? Only by abiding in him, plugging ourselves into his love and letting that love feed and fuel us, he says. The transformation from hostility to hospitality was once described by the eminent theologian Henri Nouwen as one of the greatest movements of the spiritual life. From hostility to hospitality. And certainly in my book, that movement is a sign of the risen Christ active in our world. And if Jesus requires us to love each other, no exceptions, then he requires that transformation not just of Peter and that nameless French priest, but of us too. So we need to ask, and I need to ask you, who is your other? Who is your them? The them not like us. Someone whose worldview seems at odds with your own. Someone whose race or culture or gender or sexuality or accent or politics or socioeconomic background is different from yours. If we are to mirror the love of Christ, the most inclusive lover of all, what fences must be moved, even if only just a few inches, inside our hearts? It can be a tough ask, especially when those fences have been up all our lives and we hardly know they're there. We're so familiar with them. It must have been tough for Peter, and it must have been tough for the French priest. But they were both plugged into the risen Christ, abiding in his love and attentive to his prompting. They were both prepared to put on the spectacles of resurrection. They were both courageous enough, therefore, to be open to challenge and change. Do we consent to this resurrection process in our own lives? If you're anything like me, your consent is probably laced about with ifs and buts. So perhaps it would help us to visualize our own self standing on one of those long arms of Jesus, right next to our other, and to let ourselves bask in the unconditional love of the risen Jesus towards us both. Perhaps it would help us to ask the risen Christ to fill the gaping holes in our love with his risen gold. And perhaps it will help to abide in his love now at the altar, to let him feed us there and fill us with fresh hope and the courage to live as Easter people all year long.